Welcome to This Week in Heresy, Episode 2, Religion, Race, and Batman? This week's guest via Skype is Jay Howlett. Hi, Jay. Welcome to This Week in Heresy.
This is the first time I've spoken to you in a while, so thank you for having me on. This was a lightning bolt out of the blue. I didn't expect my favorite, like, you know, pastor friend to call me and say, hey, I'd like you to be on your show. Can you resist the urge to drop F-bombs and talk about these things? And I wanted to make a good impression because, you know, you've done your whole pastor thing and you're official now. If you're listening to this and you're in her congregation, she's awesome. You are in excellent hands. Just saying.
Well, this actually goes out to my online congregation.
Excellent.
Because Between the Worlds Church is not only going to be a physical church where you can go to services, but there's going to be a really strong online component. And actually, I was poking my deacons this weekend to write some stuff on the website, and we're going to get a little more active at some point soon.
Sounds excellent.
Yeah. So a lot of the reason why I wanted you to be on is that you talk a lot about spirituality and race issues on Facebook mostly, and I hope someday you'll have a blog.
It may be coming. It may be coming.
Too.
It may be coming. Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, like, even Sarah said that, you know, he really should have a blog.
Well, I mean, we're in 2014 and everybody has a blog now. Everybody has a Tumblr. Everybody has, you know, everybody had a MySpace. Now everybody has a Facebook. Now everybody has a Tumblr. And you kind of walk this fine line when you do want to come out with a blog. And I've seen this with other blogs, and I'll send you the links for these later, such as Jay Smoove with Ill Doctrine, Elon James White and his crew with This Week in Blackness. And they're doing a phenomenal job. And you find it a little bit daunting because you do have a voice and you do want to say these things, but you know that there's a little bit of a saturation there. You can't put your voice in there, but it was just a matter of me doing it right. So this might be the push, because now, you know, there's going to be at least another 10 of your friends that listen to this, and I'll have to have something for them to read.
Well, yeah. So. And, you know, you always write a lot, these long, involved, detailed, very thoughtful posts, and it's just like, this should be on a blog.
Well, it came about like this. I guess this is part of the bio, but I have to have something more formal later because Jean asked me to. I was in education for a decade. I've grown up between Fremont, California, Hayward, California, and Oakland, California for, you know, the parts of my life up to now. I'm 35 years old, and I lived for about a third in each place, and obviously they're different places. Fremont's a lot more suburban than Oakland is. Oakland has its own brand of havoc. It has some beautiful parts, but it has its own craziness. And when you do that and you're an American African male, you see different things, but when you go out into the world, the challenge you face, especially if you've come as far as you having your own beliefs and as I have in my own beliefs and just evolving as a human being, is unfortunately some of your friends don't share those same beliefs. Right. And when those things fall along ethnic background lines, when those things fall along, you know, lines of sexual preference or of, you know, religious belief, you can't separate those things from you. And the thing that I find, I guess, the most troublesome is you can't have a conversation to allow these people to rationalize why they should recognize your humanity.
Right.
So I did a lot of reading when I ran into these same barriers with friends of mine, because, you know, some friends of mine were saying, you know, oh, I'm libertarian, or saying, oh, I'm, you know, Republican. And I'm sitting here watching these people shouting down everybody, as well as friends of mine on screen that aren't, let me see if I can cover them all, straight, white, male, cisgendered, Republican, rich, and there's one more I'm leaving out, but it'll come to me. But if you don't fit inside that demographic, you're not accepted. And here's why. You could take it. You could look at something like AB 1070 in Arizona, where they're allowed to question anybody who's Latino to see if they're actually a citizen. You could take a look at what's happening with same-sex marriage, with rights around women. You know, heck, you know, people are still trying to make excuses to shoot people who look like me in Florida because of what happened with Trayvon Martin. These people have been excluded. And unfortunately, the same people engaging in this, leading into the point, have hidden behind Christian values. They've stated that they're doing it for the good of the country. They've stated that they're doing it because, you know, God would want this or God would want that. And then all of a sudden you start asking questions and you start running into these conflicts. So mm-hmm. I went out. I felt that I'd done the reading. The book that I started with, I'll never forget this. I walked into the B Street bookstore in Hayward, California. And I told the guy about my problem. And I was like, I need a really good history book because I know that these things aren't true. So he handed me a copy of A People's History of the United States, 1492 to present. And it was a firestorm from there. I finished the book in 3 days. And then I went right on to Lies My Teacher Told Me by James Lowen. I went right on to Perversions of Justice with Ward Churchill. And these are all books that I just consumed because it confirmed the things that I had seen as I was growing up. So I sit here now and I remember, I think back when you, I'm trying to remember what year we met.
Oh, it was a while back.
Yeah, it was way back. It was at least a decade, I think. I think it's been a decade.
Because I don't think it was that long after I moved out here.
Yeah, you went through like about like 12 different hair colors.
Yeah, 2006 maybe, 2007?
Yeah, I have to like track the eras with the hair colors.
Right.
Gina, Pastor Gina and I met through mutual friends, and I found out that, you know, if I can talk about it, you impressed me because you actually were out protesting against the pro-America rallies that were taking place at the time.
Right.
Yeah, and that won a lot of points with me because, you know, somebody being out on the front lines, I was like, wow. So we automatically clicked, and that's why we're having the conversation here. But in contrast, I had other friends who were defending the actions of George Bush and defending the actions of Dick Cheney and his cadre. Now, to be clear, because I don't want to alienate anybody in what I'm saying, I get that people have grown up certain ways and that their parents have instilled certain things in them. And I'm not saying these things to disrespect your parents. Maybe they're, you know, there's always this speech about, you know, you're one of the good ones because you're part of this group, but you're not like them. Well, it's kind of a bad thing because if that group that you're with still hasn't denounced this injustice over here, what do they really stand for and what are you going along with? And this was what I frequently butted heads with friends of mine on. I've still had friends who, you know, have sworn, you know, upon, you know, 15 different, you know, deities that even though they're a Republican, they don't believe in this, but we're not seeing that within that religious or within that political demographic. And in fact, it shouldn't even have a role because church and state are supposed to be separate. So why do these people get to legislate based on their version of Christianity?
Right. Exactly. And, you know, and that's the other thing with my ministry as well. You know, I started really looking at liberation theology, which, you know, started in South America mostly.
Okay.
If you read the Pedagogy of the Oppressed, that's such a great book. We'll put all the books that we mentioned in the
link that I'll read it.
Yeah. by Paulo Ferrer. Oh, I think I'm butchering the name, but you know, it's a lot of that same idea. You know, what do we mean when we say we are Christian? What do we mm-hmm. mean what do we mean when we say we're pagan? Mm-hmm. You know, what do we mean when we say that, you know, we follow Jesus? What do we mean when we say that deity is immanent in everybody?
Right.
You know, I found no matter what the community, it doesn't really matter. You know, mm-hmm. if you say Jesus loves everybody or Goddess loves everybody or Odin loves everybody, you know, and it's like, do you mean Shiva. That?
Yeah.
You really truly believe that? Do you mean that? You know, and when you say everybody is welcome, do you mean that?
And it's a very, and from what I've seen, it feels like a very deliberate strategy on the part engaging in it. When I started to make these posts, like the ones you noticed and the ones that I went back over, I had friends of mine, dear friends of mine, who were also Christian and wondered, hey, you know, are you taking shots at us when you say these things? Are you angry with us for being, you know, Christian? This is unfair. No, I wasn't. But it's hard to discern, but when you understand why it's hard to discern, you start to kind of get a look at the underlying issue. And the fact of the matter is that these people who are engaging in this and calling themselves Christian have used this as a deliberate strategy. The issue that I had was when I started writing these things about the hypocrisy that I saw of Christians, so-called Christians, rather, who were from the right wing and who were also, some of them were also libertarian and, you know, Tea Party and what have you, was that they would speak these platitudes about, well, real Christians believe that, you know, gay people are going to hell and lesbians are going to hell and blah, 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 blah. And they apparently were really good at this. But never mind the fact that, you know, they're obviously not God himself. But what they would do is they'd say, well, we're Christian. We're being oppressed in our Christianity. You know, don't you want to fight against these people who are oppressing us? And it's like, no, nobody cares that you're Christian. We care that you're like, you know, trying to put laws in from your religion. Right. The example I use to try to explain this to people is think about it like this. Let's say Barack Obama woke up one day, got on TV, put on, you know, some stereotypically, you know, Middle Eastern, you know, dress, and completely played up the role of looking like, you know, like Osama bin Laden. Like, okay, Obama has now become somebody who looks like he's from Al Qaeda. You know, Michelle Obama's up there in a burqa. The kids are up there in burqas. Okay. And he says that he is now declaring the United States a Muslim nation. And because of that, he's going to ban pork.
Oh, good Lord. You know, they'd be rioting in the streets.
And the rioting would be, if the rioting wasn't over the fact that it was Obama saying this and confirming everything like the Tea Party, like tinfoil crew has been doing, It's because bacon would be in short supply. People would lose their minds. Right. They'd roll into Wendy's. We can't sell, President Obama said we can't sell bacon here. No, there'd be like some guy outside crying his eyes out. But, you know, I've given people this example and they've said, you know, well, no, he can't do that because blah, 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 blah. Because what? Because he's legislating something based on his religious beliefs. OK, so why do you get to legislate whether or not GLBTQ people can get married then?
Right. Or a woman can have an abortion.
Oh. Thank you. Oh. All of a sudden, or you start asking. Vote. Yeah, you start asking these questions and all of a sudden they don't have a counter argument. But what they'll do is they'll try to get people to take those shots for them so they can continue it. Mm-hmm. And it was a good thing because I was happy to have the conversation. I've believed that, and I was talking to some friends about this today. They say that in polite company, you don't discuss politics and you don't discuss religion. And I think that that's part of the problem now, because when you don't discuss those things, you don't realize what the effects are. Somebody else is going to say, well, my dad is a Republican because he believes in being fiscally conservative and all of these things. And that very well may be true about him, but that doesn't necessarily A, negate the fact that he can vote for someone else, or B, state the fact that the group he's claimed affiliation with is really living out the things that they're speaking about.
Right.
And then you look further. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, you know, that's definitely true. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, in the coven we talk about, and actually, you know, Bishop Flinders talk about at church when we go there, and actually it's a big topic of discussion at church, is that, you know, secrets kill. And I think by also by extension is silence can kill.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because if we don't talk about these issues, then, you know, it's not out in the open. It's not being discussed at all. I mean, it was kind of like the gender issues in the pagan community before we did our work with that. You know, it was kind of like, oh, you know, this is how things roll. Or, oh, you know, Z Budapest is transphobic. And yet, you know, it's all kind of, and nobody really talks about it. But then now that it's out in the open, things have changed. And the orthodoxy's changed.
And there's no room, and even within the lack of conversation, there's no room for people to grow and change. And I'm fine with you making a mistake if you are new to a community or gaining a new understanding of something. There are friends of mine that I've been blessed to have in my life who are transgendered, and I would not have even known the struggles that that community goes through had I not met them.
Right.
You know, and when you don't know a community, it's really easy to get in a position of, well, that's not me, but those people's humanity isn't being recognized. There's been a discussion over something as, you know, petty as a card game, where there was a card that was rather transphobic. Oh. And the question of, should we remove this? And you probably saw that post, or should we keep
it? Cards Against Humanity, right?
Yeah. And Cards Against Humanity is not a nice game. It is definitely not a PG-13 game. I'm not going to endorse that for anybody who's not prepared for it.
Bad adult game.
It is a bad game. But the question is, you know, it is a game for adults. But the question was that was presented to me, and I went back and forth with a friend of mine, is, you know, what's so wrong with this card? And I was like, well, you have the right to keep it in your game. But if all of a sudden you have some transgendered friends, they don't want to play with you, and you're curious why, you may want to evaluate that. And keeping silent is what doesn't allow for that evaluation.
Well, yeah, it's just like, you know, the whole rape culture thing too.
Oh, gosh. You know,
that can be a whole nother show in and of itself.
If you want to call me back to talk about MRAs and just have me just talk badly about them for 30 minutes, call me back.
All right, we will do that. But, you know, that's a whole nother thing in itself. It's the, you sit there, you hear it, what do you do?
Right. And when you're not in, there's also another factor too, and it's that if you're part of the majority in that situation, you have a more powerful voice than somebody who's in that minority. If I'm there, let's say I'm in a room full of, you know, white males, and I'm discussing privilege, and I'm having this very volatile conversation, because when you bring this up, a lot of people tend to feel guilty. You know, you get the right. whole, I never owned a slave. Some of my best friends are black. You go into this, and that's across any minority. Some of my best friends are gay. Some of my best friends are Latino, what have you. If you're not part of the minority in that situation, if you're part of the majority and you say something, your voice is like, you know, 10 times more powerful because you have nothing to gain by it. There's this really backwards mentality in the United States and in a lot of places, I guess, that says, I'm only saying this for my benefit. I'm not saying it because this person over here doesn't deserve to be, you know, assailed, treated less than, you know, it's strictly for my own benefit.
Right.
And it's never, you know, it's when you have somebody in that minority who recognizes that you have more power in the situation, because all of a sudden it's like, well, wait, you're not one of them. So why are you saying this?
Right. And it's, you know, how do you use that power? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. you can sit there and just not do anything, mm-hmm. or you can use your power to change things.
Yeah.
Some good.
And especially when those people are higher up in a power structure, whether it's a financial power structure, whether it's a, you know, social structure, what have you. One incident that comes to mind is what happened with Brendan Eich with Mozilla and the whole controversy around that, when, you know, oh, well, he only donated $1,000 to an anti-gay cause. You know, that shouldn't matter about him becoming CEO of a company. And I'm sitting here looking at this debate and I'm like, this guy can determine whether or not they make a deal with a company that happens to have LGBTQ people in it. He can determine whether or not somebody comes out of poverty. I know that if I hadn't had some of the opportunities given to me just by having one connection, I wouldn't have been able to better my life. Can you think about what would happen if you were a transgendered person, let's say somewhere like Atlanta, Georgia, where somebody got beat for being transgender just about a week or two ago, and you're already dealing with a situation where you might be ostracized by your parents, you might not be able to get employment, you might be homeless. And all of a sudden, you're some amazing programmer and you get signed to Mozilla and they want to bring you out to California, set you up with enough money to start a new life. But this guy puts a quash on it because he doesn't like the fact that you're transgendered. This right. is the type of issues with the power structure.
Exactly. And, you know, and it's it extends to any type of minority status. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm hoping to get there's some women from church who are African-American and transgender, and I'm really hoping to get them on at some point in the future. I have to email them. But
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think that would rock. But, you know, it's like even in the power structures of the modern church institutions, you know, if you look at those institutions, they don't really represent the people that they serve. And there's a power mm-hmm. imbalance there. Mm-hmm. And I think, even in the progressive community, and I think mm-hmm. this is a really difficult thing, because this is also in the pagan community too. Mm-hmm. If you look at all the big name pagans, if you look at a lot of the progressive leaders, with notable but few exceptions, mm-hmm. you know, they're primarily white.
Yeah. And I've talked with people about that. One of my good friends, Sochi, and I have had conversations about that. I went to PantheaCon when it occurred. And it was interesting to me because I thought I was going to be, you know, the only black person there. I wasn't. It was really cool to meet her and to have the discussions around people of different faiths. But we still did have a couple of people who seemed like their sole purpose was to disrupt the conversation, to talk about how much they hated Obama. Right. And yeah. If you want to critique Obama, I'm fine with that. He's not perfect. I don't think anybody is. But right. there's valid critique, and then there's coming from an invalid place. Right. I could talk about what he's done that I don't like or do like, but I'm doing it from a place of I still think he could do better. But I find people defending some of the policies of like a George Bush or a Dick Cheney or a Mitt Romney or other people who have been completely absurd in some of their ideas. And it's not a fair critique. You have critique coming from people like Ted Haggard. It's like, why are we having this conversation when you got caught with a same-sex prostitute in a car with methamphetamine? And to be clear, we're not talking about me being perfect. I am far from perfect in real life, but I'm also not damning homosexuals to hell every week from a pulpit. Right. Huge difference. It's been nice, though, in dealing with that, that I've seen this upswell of Christians particularly who have said these people do not in any way, shape or form represent us. It really kind of like warms my heart after some of the things that I've seen happen. And then I'm sure you've bore witness to see them stepping up. Actually, one that I'm really proud of, and this is a really talented guy. I'm a big fan of mixed martial arts. I'm constantly watching like UFC, Bellator, because it's kinetic chess. It's something I do. Right. And one of the people I've seen stand out is Benson Henderson, who's a really talented mixed martial artist from Arizona. He's completely open about his Christianity, but I've also read in interviews where he said, hey, look, you know, I was never one of the guys who was smoking marijuana. I haven't drank. You know, I'm about my faith in a lot of ways, but I also don't think same-sex marriage is the worst thing on the planet. He said this That's in an cool. open space, and it's such a blessing to hear him say that. And it's amazing because he's in this hyper-masculine environment being a mixed martial artist, but he still found space and time, especially within his faith, to say that and expose people to it so they can look at him and say, wow, here's a guy who's Christian, but he's obviously, you know, a little bit off the beaten path over here. And this is what he believes. So maybe they'll see that and stick to that. I've also seen Christians tired of being misrepresented on Facebook and other groups, you know, that have said, hey, this doesn't represent us. We need to take our faith back from these people who are misrepresenting it. Because we've had 8 years, you know, we had a solid eight years with Bush of people completely misrepresenting it. And now they're kind of trying to hold on to the strings of it.
Right.
You know, so it's been good to see it.
Yeah. And you know, and I've been seeing it a lot because, you know, I went to a progressive seminary and I've been going to refuge. But, you know, I want, you know, since you're kind of outside of my own little religious bubble, I, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you is, do you think there is a racial divide in the progressive movement as far as religion goes?
I think that there easily could be. I think here's the main problem. This is the fundamental problem when it comes to speaking in progressive terms, in my opinion. So, you know, this is an expert opinion or whatever. White males don't realize the fact that the people that they see in power who are the same color as them do not care about their best interests. Mitt Romney, with all of his wealth, does not care about you and is only looking to manipulate whatever he has to in order to get your vote. It's the same thing with Richard Cheney. And to an extent, and dare I say, it almost, and people would say, well, why are you not giving Barack Obama that same critique? And here's why, and this is the fundamental difference. When you're dealing with Mitt Romney or you're dealing with George Bush, in my opinion, you are dealing with a person who is the default. This is who American society was set up for. They can Right. go anywhere. They can do anything. There's no critique. Mm-hmm. We have people analyzing what Michelle Obama is wearing and talking about her arms. And we have people talking about Barack Obama saying certain things. Right. This is common topic. He is under a different, you know, magnification as to his behaviors and his mannerisms and the things that come out of his mouth. It's completely different. Why? Because he's not the default. There could be a divide in progressive Christianity based around that, because I think that there are some people still trying to hold on to that good old boy GOP mentality. They want to stand up for America. And to be clear, I don't have a problem with you being conservative. Mm-hmm. I have a problem with you imposing it via law on everyone.
Right, right.
That's the issue. If you are a person, in my opinion, who doesn't believe in abortion, don't have one. Yeah. That's cool. If you're a person who doesn't believe in same-sex marriage, don't get married to the same sex. That's fine. That shouldn't exist.
Right.
Nobody is forcing you to marry, you know, the, 250-pound, you know, guy who's a little bit hairy and says he goes, you know, parties with his boyfriend on Fridays. Nobody's forcing you into that. But the issue, again, is them, you know, forming these laws. And as much as you also have a problem with, you know, people who are feeling like they're kind of on the outskirts, you have liberals who don't want to hold people accountable, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
They're a little bit too permissive, and they're saying, oh, these people are doing this because they're poor. It's like, no, they're doing it because they're being a little bit of jerks and they're waiting on that. They're waiting for you to give them a pass. I like to call it the Batman Joker Punisher example. Yeah. This is gonna sound completely strange to people. I got like 3 minutes left, so I'm gonna fit this in. Think about it like this. For those who aren't familiar, maybe you haven't read a comic book, I don't know, and I'm not, you know, judging you for that. Batman is Batman, he is a superhero. Joker is the Joker, he's a villain. Punisher is a hero from the Marvel Universe who happens to use firearms instead of superpowers. He kills people. they go to Gotham City, and the Joker is meeting with Jigsaw, who's a villain in the Punisher universe, for some sort of business deal. Punisher and Batman both show up through like kind of different angles, and they start kicking, you know, supervillain butt, and the Punisher chases Joker out, and the Joker trips over some garbage cans, and he's telling the Punisher, oh, well, I could possibly be rehabilitated, and all this other, you know, blather about how, you know, he's still redeemable. The Punisher doesn't say much. He just cocks a 45 caliber pistol and puts it to his head and is about to kill him until dun-dun-dun-dun. Batman swoops in and saves him. Mm-hmm. What does this have to do with anything? I believe that there are certain people who wait to exploit that sense of mercy in people.
Yes.
And the people who the liberals who've went too far, I guess, give passes to are those people. Nobody's saying that you should be able to necessarily, quote unquote, get a free ride. Like there's still really these old boy beliefs like, oh, everybody who's on, you know, Social Security or who's on welfare just doesn't want to work. And things like that.
Yeah.
There are some people manipulating the system, but the number of them is so much smaller than the people who actually need that help. We live in a time where, you know, we have people suffering massive layoffs and they can't find ways to provide for their family. It's not a lack of hard work on their part. It's a lack of them having an opportunity. But you have other people who look at the people who are blatantly abusing the system and say, well, that's just how those people are. And that's not as good. And that's not good either.
Yeah.
So I could see a split. I don't see one now. A friend of mine named Jessica, who's actually a genius, said that she thinks that you're going to have gay white men who start kind of gravitating toward the GOP.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, the log cabin Republicans do exist.
Right. Yeah. which makes no sense.
Right. And, you know, a wise mentor told me a couple years ago, and she said, even the margins have margins.
Right.
And, you know, and at that point, it was also in reference to, you know, myself. You know, I'm a Wiccan Christian, and, you know, I'm in a church that's, you know, kind of is a Methodistical.
Methodistical.
That's what Bishop calls it.
Wow. That's awesome.
you have to come to Refuge with me one day.
Okay.
But you know, I was at theologically, I was on the margins, even in that church, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that when you come from a conservative background or a different background, you know, you don't get rid of that right away.
No, you don't.
You can't. Whatever you learn from the cradle is something that is always in you. And it takes a lot of work to change that.
Certainly.
And so, you know, how do you, you know, I know for me, when I'm dealing with people and they're coming up against my theology, my Wiccan Christianness, and it's something new to them, you know, it's like, okay, how do I teach them and meet them where they're at and be real about it?
It's a really tough thing. You want to try to explain this because they're sitting here seeing all of these things where it's like, you know, these people are damning me to hell. The things that put me in touch with it, and I'll out myself, you know, as being pansexual and whatnot, it's kind of the power of a mask, I guess, was that there was a guy named Lonnie who was in my mother's life, and he was like a father figure to me. And I'll never forget this because, A, he was a guy I looked up to. He was working this great job at Citibank, and, you know, he's one of the reasons I got into computers. And, B, about a year or two after that, I saw him sitting in a hospital bed, and he died of HIV.
Right.
And when I came to terms with my own sexual preferences and whatnot, he definitely helped with that, and he helped me find strength in it because this is also somebody I knew who was doing God's work. Right. You know, this is somebody I knew who was extending that hand that most of the Christians that I know of and that I still deeply respect do. You know, I've never seen that spirit of giving or that spirit of acceptance leave them. I've never seen, you know, it's one thing to tell somebody, you know, hey, maybe you need to deal with this problem that you have with methamphetamine. That's right. Killing you. You know, it's another thing if you don't have anything to really base this on. And people like yourself, people, and I'm not saying this just because I'm on a radio show, by the way. She is actually an awesome person. I've seen this before you knew any of it. I'm not just kissing butt here. I like to clarify that. Other people that I've had who have been friends that are Christians over the years have expressed that same giving and that same accepting, you know, nature, meeting people where they're at. But that voice, just like we said, needs to be there. It needs to be there to oppose that, you know, silence, or people like, you know, Westboro Baptist Church, Ted Haggard, George Reekers, a number of people I could name who are saying, you know, we're really Christian. We're really Christian. No, I don't know about that. I'm pretty much, you know, of the mind that I think that if Jesus did come down today, he'd probably break out the horsewhip on some people, which would be kind of awesome.
Yeah, it'd be very much a, you know, Jesus in the temple kind of moment, I think.
Yeah. But it's people like yourself and people who are Christian and saying, hey, we accept you. We will perform same-sex marriages at our church, and we will accept you in our congregation or open those doors. Or, you know, that's how I came into Unitarianism. I saw when I went to the Unitarian church that I did, okay, you're Catholic, you're Christian, you're Muslim, you're Jewish, but we all care about these social issues. We all care about helping the poor, making sure that people have enough to eat. So let's work together on this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And
that's the type of acceptance that builds a community.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's also respecting the differences too. And I talked with this Sarah on the show last week with Sarah, you know, it's accepting that, yes, we have similarities, but we also have differences, and acknowledging, mm-hmm. hey, you know, you have this difference, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's a matter of peaceful coexistence. I mean, I always see the bumper sticker in the Bay Area that says coexistence, and it has like six or seven different symbols on it. And that's how it should be. You know, okay, your thing in your religion is you still want to help the poor out, and maybe you want your wife to be more covered and you eat pork, and that's different for me.
Right.
That's cool. It's not like you're like, you know, forcing your beliefs down my throat. That's also been something that gave me the animosity that I had when this conversation came up, because time and time again, I ask people, you know, okay, you're fine with, you know, these Christians because they are saying they're Christian, but they're setting up laws. If you had somebody say who was Wiccan who said, and you must make a pentacle in front of your house and put sprinkles on it and put a My Little Pony, you know, Pinkie Pie in the center, you'd have a problem with that if that right? was law.
Absolutely.
So why do you get to pass something that says, you know, somebody can't, you know, marry who they love if, you know, they're doing it out of love? So,
yeah, I have one last thing I want to talk to you about.
Sure.
And I think this goes for any person who is in the majority who wants to be an ally to a minority, and mm-hmm. using those in general loose terms, and they're not great, but, you know, hey, it works for now. But how do you help people not have a sense of fail? And what I mean by that is, you know, there are some times where I consider myself an ally to a particular community.
Okay.
And, you know, you go on things like Tumblr or Facebook or Twitter or, you know, one of those things. And, you know, all you see are messages like, if you're an ally, sit down and shut up.
Ooh, good question. Good question.
And, you know, I know for me, it's like, okay, well, what do I do? Because, you know, if I know I can't speak for people, but I also have power that I can use to be of service.
Real life example. The Cards Against Humanity card came up. As people have known, if they've been keeping an eye on the internet, the creator has decided to remove the card that said passable transvestite. Well, what does this have to do with transgender people if they're not the same thing? I posted on my Facebook originally, I'm glad to see that this is happening and that he's acknowledging this. I got a reply back from a friend of mine who is a white male, and I'm not beating up on white males. I'm giving this as an example because they're the default in the situation, and I'll talk about that a little bit in a second.
Right.
A back and forth engaged when I tried to explain, you know, the issue here is that this card, A, is being moved by the creator. B, you have the right to put it back into your game if you want to. C, you have to be prepared for the consequences of that. D, I'm definitely not transgendered. I'm a cisgendered male. I've just heard this. And E, if you keep that card in the game, it's going to perpetuate that same culture of silent unacceptance that we've spoken about that encourages the violence that we've seen. I mean, we're living in a time where it's okay to see a transgendered kid on the bus or somebody who's dressing outside of the norm and light their legs on fire.
Right.
When is this appropriate? So, what does this have to do with what we're talking about with the sit down and shut up thing? Simple. I'm cisgendered. I'm not transgendered. I'm pretty much probably going to be male till the day that I die. But the first thing that I did when I made that post and had that conversation was I went to my transgendered friends and said, hey, is this acceptable? Is there anything I missed in this? I don't want to do that. And personally, I don't think it's justified to tell people to sit down and shut up.
Yeah.
I really don't. There's always a saying that it's not your job as a part of the minority in question to educate the majority. And that's true, right. But it's only to an extent. One thing I've stressed with the kids I've been blessed enough to mentor, like Michael, who's this like 6 foot tall Jewish kid that I know,
right.
And Willie, who's, you know, a black kid that I'm just mentioning this as details. I met him while I was working at a high school in Oakland. He picked me up as a mentor. I don't know why he doesn't know what I did in Vegas, but
well, that's good. I think, right?
Right. But I say that because I always told them, do your half. You have to, you know, nothing, you, there are a lot of situations in life where you'll think that 100% of your work is what got you there. But a lot of it, there's at least a good portion of it that's luck. Some of it's connections. There's an X factor. But if you do, you have to prepare yourself. That's what's going to help you. And I feel that just as the person who's asking the question and in that situation where they're uncomfortable because they feel that they're to blame has to do their half to actually ask the question and try to get the answers. If I'm part of that minority that's dealing with the issue, I have to explain why that is.
Right.
But as an ally, I'm not a part of that. I just know it. But at least I'm going back to ask that minority and ask those people, did I represent you correctly?
Right. And I know one thing that I practice and that I tell people is that, you know, be prepared for somebody to say no when you ask them questions.
Right, right, right.
Because right. Not everybody wants to educate. And, you know, and if you're decent about it, you know, most people will be like, well, I really don't want to talk about that right now.
Well, if you're decent about it, the fact is that you said, you know, you just said there, well, I don't want to talk about it right now, but they might talk to you about it later, or you might meet somebody who has a similar experience, and that's going to be your end to look and say, oh, I understand why this is such a grating issue. It right. happens all the time. I've told my friends openly, if you have any questions about why black people or why black men feel XYZ about this, mm-hmm. feel free to ask me. I can at least offer my opinion and try to give some insight. And I would ask the same of any of my other friends. And it helps you grow. It helps you gain, you know, new experiences and gain knowledge. Mm-hmm. And to connect back to our earlier conversation, too, that's part of the issue with what was happening, you know, earlier. You didn't have enough people asking questions, I guess, even dare I say about Christianity and saying, okay, well, these people are saying A and these people are saying B. What's the difference? We live in a very like instant society, and there's been deliberate tactics that I've even revealed. Heck, this might go on the Tumblr. I can say there's at least 4 cases where I've seen deliberate actions by people to kind of skew that and prevent them from asking those questions and put them in that same uncomfortable spot you just mentioned just to keep them silent.
Right.
There was recently an incident on Twitter where there was a hashtag that was derogatory and people were using it. It was something around men's rights, like I really can't recall the hashtag off the top of my head. I'm gonna have to find it. It wasn't not all men. It was something else, but it was a deliberate hashtag that was put up by people from a couple of boards that I'm not going to give publicity here, but yes. Everybody knows there might be a number in their name. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
But
that one, yes.
Yeah, I'm not going to give them any publicity here. Yeah, but it was a deliberate attempt on the part of that community to troll and to cause that havoc. And in that, you know, you're the person, you know, in your example that's asking, hey, what do I do to actually treat you properly and respect your humanity in this conversation? Why would they try to shut that down? And that kind of goes back to the white male issue. There are lots of, I have awesome friends. It totally sounds like some of my best friends are white comment, but my friend Daniel has done a lot of research, but he's been in that position where it's like, you know, I want to talk about this and ask questions about it, but I don't want to be offensive. How do right. I do it? And I've told him, no, you know, you're asking the question right now and you're trying to pose it as respectfully as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So that's half of the game.
Right.
You know? And as long as you're asking those questions and as long as you're willing to learn and to be fair, as long as you're dealing with reasonable people on the other side of the equation, you'll have no problem gaining a better understanding.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and you know, I'm a pastor, so, you know, it's kind of the yeah. default that I'll answer people's questions. But, you know, I do make it explicit. You know, if you want to talk to me about Wicca or paganism, if you want to talk to me about being queer, you know, all those kind or even sexuality in general, you know, I'm willing to and open to answer those questions. And I usually try and make that pretty clear with people. And, you know, But I also recognize that not everybody is willing and open to be teachers that way.
Well, I think you're kind of the future in a way, as well as pastors like you. You know, it's that meeting people. Yeah, it's that meeting people halfway. I think Unitarianism has a place. I get that people have different faiths. I think that's a great thing. But how much better would our world be if you could get, you know, one of the historic examples I think of that was recent history anyway, was when the Christians were protecting the Muslims that were praying in that square.
Oh, yeah. That was
beautiful. And we need more things like that. Please let this happen.
I hope so. I mean, I pray for that a lot. And, you know, I hope to contribute to that kind of work. So, and this is, and it's part of what this podcast is about. Yeah. So, all right. Well, thank you so much talking with me this week. And
I hope I was fun. I hope I wasn't too ranty.
No, it's good. It's good. And if people want to continue the conversation with you, where should they go?
Please, for now, I'm going to say talk to me over on Jay Howlett at Facebook. That's J-A-E-H-O-W-L-E-T-T. Drop me a line if you like this podcast. And apparently I'm going to have to set up a Tumblr. Otherwise, Pastor Gina is going to grief me
WordPress. Next time
I speak to her. Or WordPress, one of the two. So hopefully you'll see that coming soon.
Yeah, and we'll add it to the show notes when you do.
Definitely.
And people can also have the conversation in the on the blog, on the show blog.
Please.
The comments. And I'll let Jay know that if a conversation starts there, I will let Jay know.
So. Definitely.
All right. So thank you very much. And
it was an honor.
We'll hope to have you on again soon.
Certainly.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. I'd like to thank Jay for joining us via Skype. And I hope you enjoyed the show. As always, you can find us at thisweekinheresy.com to join our Facebook page, follow us via Twitter, or make comments on the show or read the show notes. And I hope you all have a great week, and we'll see you next time.